This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. Again, just kidding. We are not being sponsored, but I think it would still be cool. So, if you've got any sponsors, let me know. So this podcast is about investigation. I'll be talking very briefly about some of the motivations behind doing the investigation and give you some insights into different ways of doing investigation that you might not have thought of. The other thing we'll do today is we'll talk really briefly about some problems with kind of what our intuitions might be about how to go about investigating for the purpose of user-centered design. Just again, the next couple podcasts are going to be about this investigation phase, right? So just to recap really quickly, what are the goals? In this phase, what we're trying to do is understand what the state of the world is, what the state of our users are, and what the problem is, right? Who are our users? Who are our stakeholders? You know, what do they care about? What are they actually doing right now? What are the problems that they encounter? What are the workarounds that they employ to solve some of the problems that they're encountering? Right? So one of the questions is, how can we go about actually doing this? And your first intuition might be, well, let's just go find some of the users and let's go find some of our stakeholders and let's just ask them. And that's actually not a bad idea, right? These are the people that you can ask the best. Some things that you should be aware of is that it turns out often these people, depending on who your users are or depending on who your stakeholders are, their time is very precious. So they don't have a lot of it to give to you, right? The other thing is that you may discover that actually what they tell you is different from what they actually are or what they actually do. So we need a method to get around that. And finally, there is a difference often between what people say and what people actually do. So you know, one of the questions you might ask is, can we actually rely on what people say about what they want in a new design? It turns out that we can only kind of do this. People are really only good at framing their needs within the language of their current designs, with the technology that they have access to. So there's a quote that's commonly misattributed to Henry Ford, but nevertheless it's instructive. The phrase was, "If I had asked my customers what they had wanted, they would have said a faster horse." So remember that Henry Ford is the builder of the first automobile, as we know it, a mass-produced automobile. And this makes sense, right? If we were to ask those people who had never seen an automobile before what they really, really wanted, they would have said, "Hey, I want something that gets me there a little bit faster." And that probably is a faster horse. They wouldn't have had the language or the thought to say, "Oh, actually, I want some piece of machinery to get me there faster, right? I want some piece of machinery that I can drive with a wheel, right?" And in fact, if you go back and look, some of those early cars are actually driven by, like, they're steered by basically these ropes tied to the front wheels. You can actually pull them in the same way that you would steer a horse, I guess. So the challenge with asking people is that they can't see past their immediate problems to different possibilities that you know exist because you are familiar with the technology. So just as a really quick example, just answer the question, how many hours did you sleep last night? And then answer the question, how many hours did you sleep last Monday? You're probably going to have a hard time answering this question because people have a bad memory. You're probably going to be able to give me some range, but is it exact? How many times did you wake up? Do you actually know? You know, that sort of stuff. So people have a bad memory for this kind of stuff. I'll give you a couple other examples. If you look at the next slide here, this is an overhead view of campus just outside of ICT. If you zoom in a little bit, you can see this a little bit better. And one of the questions people often ask is, why are there these little circular pathways that happen on university campuses? Well, if we were to ask people how to get from one place to another, say from the engineering building over to ICT, the implication is basically, well, you would take the sidewalks. But if you look very carefully, what you see is that people actually take paths on the grass, right? They make these paths, and you can actually see them because they've, grass can't grow there anymore because it's trampled on so much, so frequently. And so these are signs that people are actually taking work, they're doing workarounds. That is, that the path design on campus is actually not ideal for where they actually have to go. And in some cases, what you actually do as a designer is you can say, okay, well, if that's what you're going to do, I'm going to start to formalize that route for you. And in fact, that's what's happened outside of ICT. So outside of ICT, you have these paths that actually have these wood chips that have been placed there. The wood chips are presumably for some protective function or something like that for the ground. But actually what they do is they really make it sort of semi-formal, right? And so again, remember that these paths are actually workarounds, right? It is possible to get from, say, engineering over to ICT, taking the paths, but it's actually a longer route. But people will forget the fact that they are creating these workarounds. And in fact, you may be creating workarounds in your life, right? You may be doing something that is, you know, a little bit outside of what the expectation is, but simply to get the stuff done for yourself, right? So here's another question. Where should we put the hand sanitizer in an office space? Perhaps on the way out the door, after we turn off the computer, after we turn off the printer, after we turn off the lights, so on and so forth. And here's an image of what might happen, right? People can be very bad at predicting what they prefer if it is only a hypothetical thing. And so what this is telling you is it's giving you good motivation, again, to do the prototyping stuff, right? It's basically saying if we actually put this hand sanitizer here, we'll actually see whether or not it's actually going to work. But I think the bigger point is essentially that sometimes we can rely on what people are saying, but we have to always take it with a grain of salt, right? They're not necessarily trained as designers. They're not trained to think as designers. They're trained to think about the problem that they have at hand. I'll give you another example of where what people have to say sometimes doesn't work that well. This is a story about Bloomingdale Research. So Bloomingdale is a big retailer down in the U.S. I guess it would be kind of like, I don't know, the Bay type of thing, right? So what they were trying to do here is they were trying to bring up the sales of bed sheets. So they have all these different styles and patterns and stuff like this, and different price ranges, different quality, you know, thread count stuff. Is it made of satin? That sort of stuff, right? So what they did was they brought in some focus groups and they lined up a bunch of these bed sheets. You know, they put them perhaps on some mattresses so people could feel them, they could lie down on them, and so on and so forth. And they asked these people, pick which one of these you like the best. Right? So just for the sake of argument, let's pretend there were only five of them, labeled A to E, I guess. And everybody picked A. Right? They all liked A the most. This is the one they liked the best. So they sold only these ones for a little while. They got rid of B to E for a little while. But as it turns out, sales didn't pick up. So this is really puzzling, right? Everybody said that you'd like these ones. How come nobody ever bought any of these? So they asked the same thing. They asked people, okay, pick which ones of these you like best, right? Again, A to E. And then what they did was they said to the people as they were leaving, we don't need any of these bed sheets, so feel free to take one for free, whichever one you like the most. And everybody, as they left, took bed sheets E rather than A. So the question you might be asking, obviously, is why did they do this? Well, the answer in this particular case is that the task or the question that the interviewers were asking was, which one do you like the best, not which one would you like to use in your home, right? So just because they liked this particular bed sheet the best, perhaps it's a satin one, it's like gold or something like this, it feels really nice, perhaps it actually doesn't fit into the decor of their home. So again, you see, you know, this problem of context, right? You're not only asking the wrong question, but you're asking them a question in a place that is not really their home, right? So if we had done the same test probably in somebody's home, maybe more people would have picked E, right? Which bedspread would fit best in this home, right? Everybody picks E, because A obviously doesn't fit, right? So again, sometimes there's mismatches between what people will say and what they will do. So I spent most of this talk so far kind of, you know, going off on people, right? People are useless, can't trust them to do anything. They're not actually useless, right? People are very good at telling us a couple of different things. People are very good at telling us what they're doing right now, right? If you're doing something and I ask you, you can tell me what you're doing. You can also tell me what you're feeling. You can tell me if you're frustrated. You can tell me if everything is working well. right? You can also tell me what your goal is. And so one of the big lessons that we learn in the investigation stuff is that what we want to do is we want to combine interview with observation. Not only do we want to ask people what they do and what they're interested in, but we want to see them do it. We want to watch them do it, see what problems they're encountering, observe and find the workarounds that they are using, right, to get around these problems. Right, so you want to watch people in their own environment. We want to watch people as they do everyday tasks. And what we will see, what you'll see, is that new designs arise from kind of understanding what people's workarounds are, understanding where the task that they're trying to accomplish break down, right, where the tool doesn't help them accomplish their task, and when people make unexpected uses of tools, right, that gives us new ideas. So I think there are two messages here. Using a combination of what they're good at telling us and observing them can tell us a lot. Mismatches between what they say and what they do often lead to new designs, and your assumptions are likely to be wrong. To discover more, assume that your assumptions are always wrong, and that helps free your mind sort of in a way that opens us up to kind of new design ideas. So what you'll see on the course site inside the reading section is some method cards. So IDEO is a company that basically does design. That's their job. That's all they do. And what they do is they help companies design logos. They help companies design interaction techniques. You have seen in your first tutorial a video about the IDEO design method. And so the method cards, this is a set of cards that you can purchase from IDEO itself. It's about 52 different methods that you can actually do to actually investigate, kind of to do design, basically. And it's separated into four different categories. There are look cards, which are basically do observation, look at what people do. And there are different ways of doing this, right? Fly on the wall, day in the life, shadowing, personal inventory. We'll talk a little bit about these next time. You can ask users for help. So this relates to some of the card sorting stuff that we talked about in the past, conceptual landscape, collage, so on and so forth. You can learn from the facts that you gather. So this is a technique these are techniques to bring these ideas together, right? Do flow analysis, do a cognitive task analysis, so on. And finally, you can try it yourself. Use empathy tools, use scenarios, use informances. Again, some of these words may not make a whole lot of sense right now, but actually if you go into the readings there on the course site, you'll actually find out a little bit more about these. As an exercise, I would suggest that you dive into that deck. Find four cards that are very, very strange to you. You know, what is going on this slide? And we'll chat about them in class. Thanks. That's it for this time.